This is called The Small Hours. The house was perfect. It was well maintained, within my budget. At the end of a Victorian terrace, it meant I would have just one neighbour. But most important of all, there were no parks, playgrounds, or schools nearby. I monitored the street before moving in. No children played outside, perhaps because of the traffic. The only child I'd seen was a small boy coming out of a house opposite, with a young couple who appeared a little the worse for wear. In an ideal world, I'd have preferred the peace of the countryside where I grew up. But village folk have no privacy. Everyone knows their business. It was only in the city I could find the anonymity I craved. Urban life is noisy and crowded, but worst of all, even in the depths of the night, it is never truly dark. When I was a boy, the night sky was black, pinpricked with lights. Here it was blurry, almost starless. Through my back window, the only true darkness I could see was in the lane between my garden and the one opposite, untainted by the crossfire of security lights. And it was this haven of pure dark that harboured the heart of the tale I am about to tell you. There was work to be done, damp in the kitchen that was worse than the survey suggested. I was worried how the noise of this work would affect my neighbour. I'd glimpsed her through her window. She was silver-haired, somewhat frail. I posted a note through her door, but got no response. Eventually, I knocked. Her anxious face peered round the door. I'm your neighbour, I said. I told her about the damp proofing, asked if there was any time that might be less inconvenient to her than others. I was taken aback by the tears in her eyes. That is so rare these days, she said. I thought such considerateness had all but died out. She invited me for a cup of tea. As she poured, I noticed a nasty burn on her wrist. Shouldn't that be seen to? She shook her head. The clumsy deserve to suffer, as my father used to say. She was happy to talk rather than ask questions. Like me, she lived alone. In fact, she'd lived in this house all her life. Because of a childhood illness, she'd rarely ventured outdoors, and now never went out at all, watching the decent families move out of the street and less decent ones move in. Perhaps you will reverse the trend, she said. The damp proofing went without a hitch. I began to feel quite at home, more so than I had for years. The only unsettling thing was the noises from next door. When I first heard my neighbour's raised voice, I thought she must be on the phone. Then I discovered she didn't have one. I assumed she was arguing with herself, so why did she sound so frightened? I must point out that I never put my ear to the wall. I didn't want to invade her privacy. I knew how violating that could feel. But I did wonder, when the talking stopped and she suddenly fell silent. I did wonder when her footsteps creaked on her stairs, closely echoed by a tread firmer, stronger, more solid. To distract myself, I lined my shelves with old photographs. The faces that looked out at me had two things in common. They were people I had never known, and they were no longer living. I think we should be more grateful to the dead. They leave us their wisdom, their possessions, and in departing this earth, they make room for us. The least we can do is show them some respect. We burn instead of burying them, yet still we feel they take up too much space. We destroy their old buildings, build on their fields, even on their very graves, and we fill their silence with brightly lit noise. I needed some air. It was around 2, the early hours, the small hours as they used to be called. As I went into the back garden, I realized something. It was absolutely quiet. No music, no dogs barking, no passing cars. Something glinted in the grass, an empty can thrown by someone walking past. As I bent to pick it up, my scalp prickled. I turned to the lane. I could see nothing, yet someone was watching me. I felt not only fear, but an unaccountable revulsion. Yet still I stepped forward until my trembling hands rested on the back gate. There, in a patch of pure darkness, a pair of eyes slowly blinked. A hand appeared, covered in white skin that appeared brittle yet damp. Then a crest of forehead emerged, like a diseased moon, followed by the face of what might once have been a girl of about 12. Her slender body rose to a neck that was unnaturally long, and as she looked at me, she cocked her head. I was transfixed. Her lips parted in what I can only describe as a mockery of a smile, and her fingers moved towards my face. A car alarm went off. The creature, startled, shrank back, and, the spell broken, I ran back into the house. I lay on my bed with the light on, a chair against the door. As I dozed uneasily, I heard a sound like fingers brushing against the other side of the wall, and a distant whimpering, like that both of a young girl and an old woman. Next morning, I looked out of my back window. The creature was gone, of course. I tried to make light of it, another thing that hadn't shown up on the survey. But the can was still there, just by the back door, where I'd dropped it. The nocturnal sounds from next door had unnerved me such that I called on my neighbour. She invited me in. "Do you like old photographs?" she asked. Hers were of her family, cousins, grandparents, an aunt who lived by the coast, where she'd stayed once as a child to take the sea air. "I've never been so sick," she said, and laughed. So I laughed too. "And your close family?" I asked. I'd noticed spaces in the album where pictures had been removed. "My mother died soon after I was born," she said, then, with hesitation, turned the page. The picture showed two girls and a man behind them. "You look a little like him, you know," she said, and touched my hand. It was the first time I'd been touched in many years. The father's hard white face was half in shadow, eyes cold, but lips unnaturally full. One girl I'd have recognized as my neighbor, even if it hadn't been for the scar on her wrist, livid and weeping, even in monochrome. But it was the other girl in the picture who made me catch my breath. It was the creature in the lane. That night I dreamt, or heard, a low sobbing, a guttural, gloating laugh. That night I dreamt, or remembered, being out in the street in the small hours and seeing the little boy who lived across the way. He was shivering, lost and tearful, his parents nowhere to be seen. His hand clutched for mine as I brushed past him, back to my home, my sanctuary, telling him, "Don't talk to me. You must never, ever, ever talk to me." After that night, I hardly slept at all. The house that had become my haven now felt contaminated. I'd scrub and scrub, but all the surfaces, All my things remain sticky to the touch. The lane. The girl in the lane. All my life I felt misunderstood, my words and actions misrepresented, my silences even more so. But this girl, this mere girl, looked into me and saw who I was. And she did not judge. Children see things. They know something we have forgotten. Despite my revulsion and fear, I believe she was reaching out to me. I was so afraid. But sometimes we must do things we don't think we can. The night before, there'd been a party in one of the houses, its light and noise disturbing the lane. But tonight, it was dark and quiet. I crept across the grass, opened my gate and stepped out. I felt nothing, no presence, no eyes blinked at me from the patch of darkness. I moved deeper into the shadows, and as I did so, it was like slipping into an icy pool, and I was overwhelmed by a feeling of terror and sorrow. A pale shape formed at my feet, then unravelled itself to its full height. There, just inches from my face, was another, almost monochrome in the darkness. Under the ruins of her skin, her features had captured the first promise of adult beauty that is then submerged in adolescence. Yes, she was dead, and yet she breathed, and I inhaled a scent of salt, sweat, fresh blood, cold earth. There was a clattering sound within the lane, a cat pouring open a dustbin. As the girl shrank back, I held her, and something came away on my hands. Her lips parted, and I realized this was not the mockery of a smile, but the best this poor creature could do. A silence fell once more. She turned, her head jerking sideways on her unnaturally long neck. I followed her gaze, and as I did so, something trailed across my cheek, its icy touch burning me. That is why she'd summoned me. She wanted me to see. I looked towards my neighbour's house, at the upstairs window, and there, pressed to the glass, was my neighbour's tear-stained face, staring out pleadingly at the girl. They were separated by death, one trapped inside, the other imprisoned here in the dark. What was it that kept them apart? What stopped this spirit crossing the threshold into her home to be reunited with her beloved sister? That was what I was meant to discover. That is why I'd been summoned to the lane. And now I saw. And now I understood, because as I looked more closely, there, behind my neighbour's face, in the shadows of her room, loomed another, hard and white and masculine, the eyes cold, full lips glistening in a malevolent smile. And as I looked, he extended his fingers and beckoned. Come home, my darling. Come home. I fetch her groceries, help her with odd jobs, although I've never been allowed upstairs. You must think I'm so old-fashioned, she said, averting her eyes, because she knows I understand. I never stay to chat anymore, talk about her past. Her photo album has been shut to me for good. I wrote a letter to social services about that boy. Anonymous, of course. One's interest in such things is often misconstrued, one's intentions misrepresented, in a world where a desire to help is greeted with suspicion. So I keep myself to myself, much as I can. and stand at my back window at night, the imprint of the girl's fingers still burning on my cheek, and watch her standing mournfully in the lane in the small hours. Sometimes she retreats at the crackle of fireworks that seem to disfigure the night all year round, and other times the beam of a security light will send her shrinking back into her diminishing pool of darkness. And one night that darkness will be eroded to nothing. And where will she go then? The small hours get ever smaller, and the time will come when we have finally abolished darkness and silence, and we will have banished the dead forever.